If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We have warm weather in the forecast. The growing season is on the horizon. Horticulture Day is back on the air every Friday through November. It is time to make plans for starting seeds. Horticulturist Richard Giron is here today joining us from retirement. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to hear your voice. I hope you're doing well.
I am.
Good.
I get my second COVID-19 shot next week.
Oh, that is wonderful news.
That'll be really great.
That is wonderful news. Aaron Stile is also here with us today, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And I want to start our seed starting conversation with the seed shortage. Richard, have you had any trouble ordering seeds that you normally can get your hands on this year?
I haven't, but some were on back order. So there is a high demand, and some of the seed was on back order, but I did get it eventually. So you may run into some problems, but I've been out in some of the garden centers and home and farm stores. There's a lot of seed in those retailers.
Well, it sounds like I was listening to a piece just this morning on Morning Edition. There's just so much demand this year that it's not so much a seed shortage, but it's a logistical problem. Aaron, how about you?
I haven't had a lot of trouble, but I also haven't really went out and bought anything super weird, which I think are some of the things that are a little bit more difficult to get your hands on.
Sure. And I think some people are going to just have to grow maybe not their favorite variety of zucchini this year or something like that. We're just going to have to be a little bit flexible is what it sounds like to me. So, of course, a lot of people have already ordered their seeds. Richard, if you haven't already ordered seeds, is there still time?
You still can. You want to do it soon. There are some good mail order catalogs like Burpee, Park, Johnny's, Harris. They have a wide selection of seed. There's a lot of seed in the retailers, local ones, like garden centers and other stores. So you can still get the seed.
All right. And then once you get that seed, Aaron, you need to make kind of a schedule for when you're going to start these seeds. You don't want to just start them all right now, right?
Yeah. The back of the seed packet will tell you how many weeks to plant them ahead of transplanting outside. And you'll kind of want to use a calendar and back it up, because one of the most difficult things to deal with are seedlings that have been inside too long. They get lanky and tall and spindly, and they don't transplant very well when they're like that. So planting the seed too early is not beneficial.
Well, I think we are always really eager to get started with a process like this. And I feel like because of the pandemic, maybe we are even more eager to have something hopeful and happy and active that we can do and grow right now. So I think that we're going to have to work really hard to be patient this year. Richard, for starting seeds at home, what's your favorite setup?
Basically, I use fluorescent lights. You can use LED lights, but I use simple shop fixtures that have two 40-watt bulbs in it. And I set the actual fixtures on 30-inch 4x4s and then slide the actual trays below the actual fixture. And you have them on for maybe, as far as the lights, for maybe 12 to 16 hours a day. And that way you end up with really nice, sturdy plants. Now, the light should be no more than 6 inches above the actual plants, because the farther you get away from that, the light does disperse and they don't get enough light. So make sure the lights are at least 6 inches within the actual plants.
All right. And you're going to need to adjust, because as the plants grow, those lights need to go higher, right?
You may. And what I do is I have 2x4s that I've cut. So I just add a 2x4 to the 4x4 and raise the actual fixture that way. It's very simple to do. You can obviously hang these from a structure. You can buy these plant stands. That works fine, too. But I think mine is pretty simple.
All right. It works, and it's pretty affordable. Aaron, what do we need to know about temperature as far as we know we need the light, which Richard was just talking about? What do we need to know about temperature when starting seeds?
If you can, I mean, most of us, the temperatures that we have in our homes are pretty good. If it could be a little bit warmer, a lot of these plants might appreciate that. But more importantly, if we can warm the soil in any way, that can go a long way to improving germination and seeing kind of better growth on our seedlings. So you can buy a heat mat specifically made for this. And usually there are two different types. The less expensive ones are just going to be on, and they usually raise the temperature about 10 or so degrees higher than the ambient temperature. And the more expensive ones will have like a little soil probe with them that will actually maintain with a thermostat a temperature for that soil. And our goal here is to get the soil about 10 or so, maybe 15 degrees warmer than the surrounding air temperature, and that really goes a long way. Those plants germinate more quickly, you have a better germination rate, and the plants are really happy. And there's been some research done that shows, too, that if the soil is warm, the air temperature can be a little bit cooler, and we don't see any adverse effects. So that's nice, too.
All right. I was just going to ask you about that. I have cats in my house, and so the best place for us to start seeds is in the basement where we can protect them from the cats. But it's cold in the basement. Mm-hmm. So with an environment like that, as long as I warm the soil, do you think I'm going to be okay?
It's definitely better than nothing at all. Yes.
Okay. Yes, I'm sure that that's true. So how about moisture, Richard? What do we need to think about with moisture? Because we don't want to overwater in this situation.
Right. So the key there as far as seed germination is to have a consistent moisture supply. So once you've basically sown your seed, you want to moisten your germination medium. And then either put a plastic dome over the actual flat if you're using the flat, or you can actually also use plastic food wrap and just place that over the top, and then set the actual flat or container in bright light, but not direct sunlight. Because if you put it in bright direct sunlight, it's going to get too warm underneath that covering, and it may damage the seeds. But once the actual seeds germinate, you want to take off that covering and immediately put the seedlings under lights.
Okay. And when you say direct sunlight in this situation, you're talking about through a window.
Right, right. So put the plants in bright light, but not direct sunlight where you might get a heat buildup.
All right. Well, and the other problem that we often have if we try to use that sunlight through a window is that our plants lean toward it. So that can be a problem too, right?
Right. That's after germination. Once they germinate, if you put the actual seedlings in a window, they're still not going to get enough light, and they will bend toward the actual window and get very tall and very spindly. But as far as germination, put the actual flat in bright light, but not direct sunlight.
All right. And how quickly do you need to make sure that you pull that film or the plastic dome off of those seeds once they've germinated?
They're both clear, so you can see. As soon as you start to see quite a few seeds germinate, take it off immediately at that point.
All right. And Aaron, Richard, you know, is talking about keeping the light close, keeping it out of the window so the plants don't lean toward the window. What are some other tips to make sure that your plants don't get all spindly?
Well, certainly having that light being able to move up and down, which Richard talked about. My setup, my light's on a chain. I know some other folks, the light's permanent and they use bricks to lower the tray down. They just put it up on high bricks and pull it out. That helps a lot. And making sure that you don't start the seed too early. Both of those things we've already talked about, but those can go a long way to helping with nice stocky plants, which transplant much better outside.
We've also talked in the past about how maybe having some movement in the air might help those plants become stronger. What do you think about that, Aaron?
Setting up a little fan is nice for a lot of plants, and seedlings are no exception. If you've noticed that things stay wet too long, that can help a little bit. But the goal here is not to have the fan kind of blowing directly on the plants. It should be just enough air movement that the leaves barely move and that it's not directed right at the surface of the flat or something like that. It's just enough to kind of keep things moving around, help kind of regulate temperature a little bit better, maybe help a little bit, although it tends to lower the humidity a little bit when you have air movement like that. But just to kind of keep things kind of moving around, there are folks who might use this to also help the plants harden off a little bit, but moving them outside gradually once temperatures get a little bit warmer in the spring does a much better job of that than just a little fan.
Okay, and I was actually just about to ask you about that. So once I've done all of this hard work and my plants have grown and I want to put them outside, Richard, what do I need to do to make sure they can make a successful transition?
So about a week before you intend to plant them outside, bring them outside and put them in complete shade, kind of out of the wind, in a protected area, and leave them there for several days. And as you do so during those several days, gradually expose those to large, longer periods of sunlight. And so after about a week, they're kind of used to the sun and they're used to the wind. It kind of hardens off the plants and they're ready to go.
All right. And that's important to do if you're buying plants that somebody else has started too, right? We get those plants from the garden center. And I know there are going to be a lot of fairly new gardeners this year. So we get those plants from the garden center. We're so excited to get them in the ground. But that hardening off period, that's very, very important, isn't it?
Right. Especially if they're grown indoors or in a greenhouse. Those that you purchase outdoors, like at a garden center, if they're outdoors, that kind of hardens them off. But if you're buying them from a greenhouse, you're growing them indoors, they haven't been exposed to the direct sunlight. And if you put them in direct sun immediately, that intense sunlight will actually burn the foliage. It's too much. So they need to kind of gradually harden off.
All right. So patience, patience, patience is what we need to think about here. Something human beings are really, really not very good at. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Horticulturist Richard Giron is here with us today, along with Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. They're here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me, horticulturist Richard Giron, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is also here. They're here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dan is on the line in Ames. Hi, Dan.
Can send email.
Dan, you need to turn down your radio. What's your question?
Dan is online in
Hi.
Ames. Hi, Dan.
Okay. Hi, how are you doing?
Good. You need to turn
Dan
down your radio.
I just turned it off.
Okay, thank you. What's your question?
Well, I'm getting some DNR trees, bare root, approximately 300, and planting them along my fence line. And I've done this before. I've always had problems with the rabbits and deer. And I was just wondering what their best recommendation for protecting against wildlife.
All right. So protecting tiny trees.
I can't put cages around them.
You can't put cages around them. Richard, what do you think?
No. Well, the caging would have been the best. And the number does make it kind of difficult to do. There are repellents, but the problem with repellents is they sometimes work and sometimes they don't. and also you have to reapply them periodically. So that would be an option if fencing is not, but fencing either hardware cloth or something else would be far superior.
Okay.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot for your call. And Richard, I mean, you can get pretty creative with caging, right? So it really does work.
It really does. The rabbits can be, especially where you have a prolonged period where you have snow cover and food is simply not available above ground, anything that sticks above the ground is fair game as far as rabbits are concerned. And they can destroy plants very quickly. But if you have some type of caging like hardware cloth fencing around them, that can stay there for several years, and that keeps the actual rabbits away. It also helps with deer, too.
All right. Well, here's a seed starting question, Aaron. This one's from Twitter, and they say, I'm starting flowers from seed for the first time. Any tips for vining petunia, black-eyed Susan vine, marigolds, or bachelor button?
I think starting, most of those are going to work pretty nicely from home. Petunia in particular tends to be really small, the seed does, but when you have to sow really small seed, there's a couple options you can do. Some folks will mix it with a little bit of sand and then do that. It just helps disperse the seed a little bit better in the little cell, and then it makes it a little easier to weed them out later, but you're going to probably have to thin the plants a little bit later. All of those would appreciate bottom heat or heating up the soil to help them germinate. And most of them are probably going to need around 8 weeks, but the marigolds will probably need a little bit less. But again, the back of the package will tell them how to get started.
All right. And if you had to say, is it easier to start flower seeds or vegetable seeds?
Oh, you know, it just depends. There are certain flowers that germinate so readily and easily. Marigold's a great example of that. It's a great one to do with kids, too, because the seed is large and easy to pick up and sow, and it germinates quickly, and they grow reliably, and they're really quite easy to grow outside, too. And then there are other flowers like begonia that are just really a lot more difficult to grow. And the same is true for vegetables. Things like tomatoes and basil grow really easily from seed and are relatively easy to sow and germinate really reliably. And other things, you know, I always struggle a little bit with peppers because they tend to be a little bit more finicky, especially about soil moisture and temperature. And so I sometimes don't see as good germination as a result. So it really is more species by species rather than flowers versus vegetables.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Dan is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Pardon me.
Yeah.
I have ordered some kiefer pear trees. I actually moved last fall, and I had some where I was before. It was nice flat land there. But here, I have some choices about where to put them, and one of the places is a south slope. Now, I understand that there are some fruit trees that if you plant them on a south slope, they can get fooled into blooming too soon and get nipped by frost. Mm. And I wonder if pears are among those fruits or whether they will do well on a south slope.
Richard?
Well, as far as fruit trees, they do need a well-drained soil. That's imperative. As far as being on a south slope, that will kind of encourage early bloom. That would be most critical for fruit trees that bloom very early. For example, apricots, peaches, that type of thing, they tend to bloom much earlier than apples and pears. And so putting an apricot on a south slope would not be a good idea, or a peach. With apples and pears, it's not as critical, I don't think. But for me, my primary considerations are a full sun site with a well-drained soil.
All right. And pears tend to do really, really well here in Iowa, don't they, Richard?
Yes, they do, along with apples.
All right. We get so many pears every year, more than we know what to do with, which is a great problem to have. Dan, thanks a lot for your call and good luck with that. Let's go next to John on the line in Des Moines. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about, I have a rather large walnut tree in my yard, and I've had a real difficulty growing tomatoes, which I haven't had anywhere else that have lived. And I'm just wondering what types of plants, what types of vegetables specifically would do around a walnut tree, and can I mitigate the problem that the walnut tree gives my tomatoes?
Aaron?
Tomatoes in particular are very sensitive to walnut, and so we do see that problem with tomatoes. Grapes are another example of that. So the other vegetables that are particularly sensitive to walnut include things that are closely related to tomatoes, like potatoes, peppers, and eggplant. And
peppers, of course, I can't grow peppers to save my life.
And they also wouldn't like being near a walnut tree. All vegetables are going to struggle if they're in the shade of any tree, including a walnut tree. So as long as you have full sun, you can try some other things. Some of the coal crops might tolerate this a little bit better. So things like broccoli and cauliflower. And certainly most of the kind of leafy greens would probably tolerate this situation a little bit better. So lettuce, spinach, kale. But it really, they do still need to be in full sun. And so they have to be far enough away from the plant to avoid that. Squash would probably do okay. Beans would probably do better. And corn might do better too.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, John. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with Richard Geron and Aaron Stile. Sharon is up next in Marshalltown. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I had a question about my amaryllis.
Okay.
It actually bloomed twice this winter, and then it put on seed heads, and I've gathered the seeds. Could I have any success trying to grow amaryllis from the seeds that it put on?
Richard?
Yes, you can. Allow the seed pods to fully mature, and the seeds themselves are kind of wafer-like in appearance, and at maturity they should be kind of a dark brown color.
Yes.
And when they're mature, I would take the seed and plant the seed and cover it up with maybe like maybe an eighth of an inch of potting soil or a quarter inch and keep it moist and see if they germinate. It will be probably several years before the actual plant, if it does germinate, before the plant gets big enough to bloom. Oftentimes with amaryllis, they will form daughter bulbs. And that's a much quicker way to get new plants.
Yes, I've had them do that before, but I've never seen this. So, okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Sharon. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, Mim is on the line. Hi, Mim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I built a bunch of raised beds on my property that is really close to limestone underneath, and I made them a foot deep using the lasagna method with, you know, cardboard, compost, and straw and manure times two in a foot of they're a foot tall, and I wonder if that's enough or if I should put another foot of soil on top of them.
Aaron, you want to tackle that one?
So, you've built a raised bed, and you're just wondering how if you should make it deeper or not.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
because the limestone is right under the ground, you know, it's very close.
Yeah, and certainly the raised bed's a good approach. It will help with drainage and some of those other things. I would be inclined to try a growing season with my raised beds and see how things go. You, of course, can always do a soil test to find out if the pH is too high because of the limestone or something like that. and make adjustments that way. I think you're off to a really good start though. And I would be inclined at this point to kind of do a little trial and see how things go. And if you're not seeing what you like to see, or and you can get a soil test and you find that it's not where it needs to be, then my next step would be making the bed maybe a little bit deeper and seeing what happens.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. And let's do a couple of email questions here. We've got a lot of people who've sent in questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Margaret in Shoeyville says, I have a packet of arugula seeds from last year that I never opened. Is it feasible to plant seeds for a spring harvest before it gets too hot, or do I need to wait for August to plant the seeds? And as a follow-up, I tilled and planted a new vegetable garden last spring. Do I need to completely re-till it and rotate my crops? Is it okay to loosen the soil and plant veggies where I planted them last spring? So let's start with that first one. What about those arugula seeds? Can she plant those for the spring?
I think they should be viable. Typically, most seed will remain viable for at least a year or two, so I'd go ahead and do it this spring.
All right, and arugula is one of those that you can plant in the spring and the fall, right?
I believe it is.
Okay. And then how about re-tilling?
As far as the garden, I like to re-till every year. You can either do it in the fall or early spring. The one thing I would do is try to rotate where I place my plants. And so where I had tomatoes last year, I want to put them in a different location. So rotate everything in the actual garden.
All right. And tomatoes are particularly important to rotate, right?
Right. They have some really serious disease issues. And those pathogens actually persist in the soil. So putting them back in the same location, the pathogen is right there.
All right. Here's one from Judy for you, Aaron. Will bush cherries pollinate standard or dwarf cherry trees? I'm considering purchasing Jan and Joel. Already have either a dwarf black tartarian or Cerezo Bing. Okay. I hear you Googling frantically.
I don't know for sure about those specific cultivars. Most cherries that we grow are self-fertile. So they don't need a pollination partner like apples and pears do to set fruit well. So I would assume that even with the the variety will help, but I don't think the bush cherry is going to help out the tree ones as much. Of course, they have to be blooming at the same time too. So I think she's probably okay based on what I've heard.
All right. Do you want to add anything to that, Richard?
Yeah.
Yeah, the tart cherries are self-fruitful, and so one tree is perfectly fine. It's the sweet cherries, many of those tend to be self-unfruitful. But I don't believe a bush cherry is going to pollinate a sweet cherry. I don't believe so, no.
All right, and then she was also wondering, okay, I don't know if this will add to this or not, just more confusion. She says, if the two types are incompatible, what variety would you recommend for the Cedar Rapids area, preferably a dwarf tree, and how near the existing tree should it be planted? Richard?
Well, if they want a tart cherry, there are some very hardy varieties or cultivars, and they are dwarf or semi-dwarf in size. Meteor is one, and North Star is another, and they're self-fruitful. But if you buy a sweet cherry, most of those are self-unfruitful. You basically need two different varieties.
All right. And sweet cherries don't tend to do quite as well in our climate, do they?
They don't. But there are a couple from New York. Black Gold and White Gold are two very hardy varieties. They are sweet cherries, and I believe they are self-fruitful.
All right. Aaron, let's try this one from Brent. I'm growing little blue stem in a yard plot. When is the best time of year to split and transplant so I can grow it in more areas?
There's for ornamental grasses, you have a couple of options. You can do this just as the plants are starting to emerge in the spring. And this is probably when I would do this. So just as you start to see the foliage come up out of the ground, dig the entire clump out, divide it into pie-shaped pieces, and replant right away. Ornamental grasses, especially the warm season ones, can sometimes be divided later in the season, as late as early summer and occasionally in the fall. So if it doesn't get done in the spring, those are alternative times that you might be able to do it. If you do it later in the season, you have to be very vigilant about proper watering. Mother Nature helps us in the spring. You still have to be vigilant about proper watering, even when you do it in the spring. But Mother Nature is more helpful typically in the spring than it is in the later season. And so you'll have to maybe do a little bit more pampering if you do it at a different time of year. But my favorite time of year to divide nearly all herbaceous perennials, including ornamental grasses, is when they're first coming up out of the ground in the spring.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio with me, Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and horticulturist Richard Giron. They are here, of course, to answer your questions. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Iowa Republican leaders encourage wearing a mask at the Capitol, but oppose making it a mandate.
We have no way to enforce that, even if we were to say everyone in the caucus has to have a mask.
This worries Democratic leaders.
I'm concerned and want to avoid, you know, turning the legislature into a super spreader event.
Legislative leaders share their goals and concerns, and so does the governor on the podcast Under the Golden Dome. Listen to the new episode now at iowapublicradio.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, horticulturist Richard Giron and Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We have a lot of people on the phone with questions at 866-780-9100. Rebecca has one that might be a little bit outside of your wheelhouse here. Richard, let's give this one a try. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, good morning.
What's your question?
Well, I want to be a little bit proactive this year. We have an outdoor cat house where our old cat likes to sit out on the deck and kind of watch the world go by. And for the last 2 years, we've had a very determined bumblebee queen make nests in there, although we've tried to be very careful and not let that happen. Is there anything that would deter the bumblebee from getting in there?
Boy, that's out of my area. That is a Donald Lewis question.
It is. But we don't have Donald today. Erin, do you have any thoughts on that one?
I think for me, I would look at trying to seal up as many of the cracks and holes as I can in that space. Bumblebees utilize already created burrows or spaces. And so if you can eliminate as many of those as possible, that might look attractive to them, little tiny openings that can hopefully help.
All right, Rebecca, good luck with that. And we'll get Donald Lewis on the air here in the next few weeks. Maybe we can have this conversation again. Let's go next to Dick on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Say, my question is, you've talked about rotating vegetables from year to year from where you plant them in the garden. Well, how far should I move my tomato plants from where I had them last year?
Richard?
As far as you possibly can. So 25 feet is better than 10 feet. Oh, okay. 50 feet is better than 25.
All right.
Because things do get kind of moved around in the garden as far as on your rototiller or spade or shoes. So the farther you can get apart, the better.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Dick. 866-780-9100 is the number. Paul is on the line next in Johnston. Hi, Paul.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's your question?
So we planted some arborvitaes last May, and so they're relatively young. They're in the 2 to 3 foot range. And they seem to have had some trouble over the winter. There's a fair amount. Well, the majority of them is green there's a fair amount of brown in there. Is there anything I can do to kind of perk them up in the spring here?
Aaron?
Good spring care will help. The trees are still young, so hopefully they can kind of grow through some of this. Making sure, since they're relatively new plantings, making sure that that original root ball isn't drying out faster than the surrounding soil will be one thing to do. Making sure that when it is dry that you water them, but not to just put them on a weekly watering schedule, because that could lead to overwatering, which many conifers in particular don't usually appreciate. So good watering and care, maybe some protection from the winter winds next fall through the winter would be another step you could do, at least for the first few years of these plants in your garden, to help them get better established and better able to deal with some of the stressors that happen over winter.
So would that protection be like wrapping them in burlap or
You could set up burlap. It probably would be better to pound some stakes in the ground in the fall and wrap the burlap just adjacent to, but not right on top of the plants. Your goal is to break the wind.
Okay.
And so that can be accomplished that way without smothering or covering up the plant with burlap.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Paul. Next, let's go to Bruce in Mason City. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is about aronia berry plant bushes.
Okay.
Do they have male and female plants? Because I planted six, and I guess we fed three to the rabbits, so I have three remaining. But they're 5 feet tall and maybe 3 or 4 years old, and we've never gotten any fruit on them. Yet they flower in the spring, and they have what looks like little clumps of seed pods all over them, but we've never gotten any fruit. And out of the same batch of plants, we gave some to our daughter, and they get fruit on them every year.
Oh, that's frustrating. Richard?
No, they should be self-fruitful. So I'm not sure what the issue is. The rabbits definitely do like them. They're in the rose family. So I would protect them if necessary with fencing. But no, they should produce on their own.
Well, that's interesting. Because like I said, there's three and they're 5 foot tall, and we've never gotten a single berry off of them.
Okay. Is this a specific variety or just the plain old aronia?
We got them from the Iowa State Nursery. We got, 25 bare root stock, and I gave a bunch away. But
okay, so those are seedlings. And with seedlings, you should have some genetic diversity because they are seedlings. They're not a cultivar. And so they should produce on their own.
Well, here's a new one for you then. Thank you for your comment.
I wouldn't give up.
No.
I wouldn't give up.
Maybe it'll work this year.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Bruce. Oh, that is frustrating, though, especially to see someone else get plenty of fruit off of the same purchase. Let's go next to Anna in Port Byron, Illinois. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Anna, actually, like in Frozen.
Okay. What's your question, Anna?
Okay, well, I have a couple garden beds in my yard, and last year we had some pretty bad plant disease on the leaves. It was brown and yellow, and it spread pretty bad. I was just wondering what I can do this year to clean it up to make sure that the plant diseases don't affect any new plants that I put in there.
Aaron?
What were the plants that had bad disease problems? Were they tomatoes?
A lot of peppers.
Okay. Typically, if you can, if there was a certain section of the garden that you had used for peppers, using a different section of the garden for peppers this year would be beneficial. The other thing I would look into is, you know, a lot of the diseases that cause issues on tomatoes and peppers and some of these things do live in the soil. So anything that you can do to reduce the amount of soil that comes in contact with the foliage is helpful. So utilizing mulches, and in the vegetable mm-hmm. garden, things like grass clippings can work really well, or newspaper underneath grass clippings. All of those are good potential options. to help reduce that. Not working in the garden when things are really wet will help too. Mm-hmm. And making sure that the garden is in full, at least 6 hours of sunlight hitting leaves in full sun, with good spacing between the plants will all be helpful to help combat some of this.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Anna. Curly is up next in Ida Grove. Hi, Curly.
Hi, good morning.
What's your question?
I have, you're talking about the tomato plants away from the walnut trees.
Yeah.
How many feet? 10 feet, 20 feet, 50 feet?
Richard?
And that previous question sounded like it was almost about the same. The furthest away you could get them, be better. Is that true?
Right. The further apart you can get them, the better. I would say, as far as planting those, I would have them, the tomatoes, at least 5 to 10 feet away from the tree canopy, the very edge of the actual tree. And
the walnut
the further,
tree's
the better.
Been there for quite a while, you know. So
Right. But if you can get it beyond the tree canopy, like 5 or 10 feet, that's much better.
Okay.
All
Thank
right.
you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Curly. And we've got another walnut tree question here from Steve south of Des Moines. Aaron, you can tackle this one. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I wanted to ask the same question, only relative to rhubarb and asparagus, and then any tips you have on starting those, a rhubarb and asparagus patch would be appreciated as well.
Yeah, as far away as you can get them, certainly without out from the drip line, and as many feet away from that as you can. But 10 feet would be my probably minimum. Thankfully, things like rhubarb and asparagus are probably not going to be as negatively impacted as something like tomatoes or peppers would be. They're going to tolerate it a little bit better. Both of those plants, you can start by planting. For asparagus, you want to buy crowns from the store, not seed or those kinds of things. You get much higher quality asparagus from crowns, and both of them you'll plant in the spring and water them in, and both of them you're going to wait at least a couple years before you harvest from those plants to allow them to establish.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Steve. And Richard, we have a question from one of our listeners saying, this is from Al. He says, could you please revisit the month and week when tomatoes should be germinated and started indoors with respect to the typical outdoor hardening and planting in Iowa, in central Iowa specifically?
Right. So I would be aiming for around, as far as a planting date, around May 10th or so. And as far as hardening, about a week before that. Now, as far as the crop time, tomato seedlings grow very quickly. So you want to start these about 5 weeks before the intended outdoor planting planting date. So basically, you're looking at probably the first week in April.
All right. Thanks a lot for that one, Al. And Fritz has a comment about no-till gardening. We were talking about tilling earlier, and his concern is that tilling could kill the life in the soil. He says that we use straw, cardboard, or landscape fabric for mulch, poke a hole, pour fertilizer or compost in there for fertility. The life in the soil will do the rest. Aaron, what are your thoughts about no-till gardening?
Oh, that's certainly an option. And for many of us, our gardens are small enough that it's not worth going out and getting a tiller to deal with. And so either lightly turning or cultivating the soil, if that's something that you want to do. I typically don't till my garden. I know this is probably something Richard and I do differently. I usually maybe turn over the spot where I'm planting so that it's a little easier to work in. And I am constantly layering organic matter on top and letting the soil build and grow that way. So it is definitely an option. And it's certainly, in some ways, it's what the gardener prefers. There are certainly advantages and disadvantages to both approaches. And so it's whatever advantages or disadvantages you're willing to deal with.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Kathleen is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm wondering how Rainier cherry and Stella cherry do in the middle of Iowa. I'm in West Des Moines. And if there's anything special that I need to do since they're zone 5 and we're still zone 5, but, you know, it gets cold sometimes.
Richard?
Rainier, I believe that is a sweet cherry. I believe. I'm not positive on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, too.
And sweet cherries don't do very well in central Iowa. Being as a very common one, it's not reliably cold hardy. So what I would look for are some of the New York introductions, Cornell University in New York. And, for example, white gold is one. Mm-hmm. And also black gold is another one. And they're much hardier than being in some of the other sweet cherries.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Kathleen. And Bill is on the line in Eldridge. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
What's your question?
My question is related to blue spruce trees. I have a windbreak I planted 25 years ago, and the trees are all infested with blue spruce needle cast. I've been applying a fungicide and fighting that for about 8 years. Losing battle, and I'd like to start replacing them selectively. I cut out 8 of them, I think it was last year. I'd like to replant, and I'm wondering what would be the best fir tree to replace those with?
Aaron?
Most of the firs that you might find, white fir, concolor fir, all of those are good potential options. The challenge with fir is a much slower growing tree than spruce. And so it's not going to fill in as quickly as your Colorado spruce windbreak did. Certainly introducing diversity to that windbreak will be very beneficial though. And, you don't have to just do evergreens for a windbreak. Shrubs, even those that lose their leaves, break the wind and help introduce some more diversity to that windbreak so that if anything does pop up with firs in the future, you still have some other things there to help maintain a relatively consistent windbreak regardless. So just about any of the firs would be okay. Keep in mind that they're going to grow slower.
All right. Thank you very much. It was an incredible disappointment to watch this disease affect them as I've been mowing around them for 25 years. They finally filled in, looked great. They had some heights to them, you know, and it blocked a view from a road, kept some traffic noise down from the roadway. And then I would have never, you know, planted them had I realized there was something called blue spruce needle cast. And so thank you again for your recommendation.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Bill. And these things do pop up over the years, so we can't predict everything. All right, let's squeeze in one more question here. Donna in Windsor Heights. Hi, Donna.
Hi, good morning. Quick question. I have a peony tree on the southeast side of the house that I protect during the winter with chicken wire to keep the bunnies out, and fill that with maple leaves for mulch and protection from the cold north wind around the house. Is it too early to take out the mulch?
I would leave it for another 2 weeks or so at least.
Okay.
Weather in Iowa is very unpredictable in March, so I would leave it for at least another 2 weeks.
We do all get so excited when the sun shines and the snow melts. But yes, unpredictable, I think, may be an understatement, Richard. Richard Giron, thank you so much. It was so much fun to have you on the show. I hope you'll come back again this spring.
Will do.
Great. Richard Giron, horticulturist, and Aaron Style, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. And if you love books, please subscribe to the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Coming up in March, we're reading The Overstory. We'll have that conversation on the air on March 23rd. So for book lovers and tree lovers, this is Talk of Iowa.